Welcome to Scope It Out. In this edition, Dr. Smith will be speaking with Dr. Nithin Nadapa on his article, Outcomes After Complete Endoscopic Surgery and Aspirin Desensitization in Aspirin-Exacerbated Respiratory Disease. This edition of Scope It Out is sponsored by Medical Center Pharmacy, leaders in topical sinus therapy for chronic sinusitis and polyp patients. Founded in 1990, MCP provides innovative formulations that combine steroid, antibiotic, and antifungal treatments. These medications are instilled directly into the sinuses using various devices. Successful insurance billing, thorough patient education, and prompt delivery are why physicians and patients trust MCP as their premier pharmacy. Please visit www.mcpnc.com or call 1-800-930-8785 for more information.
Hello and welcome to Scope It Out, the podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. I am your host, Dr. Tim Smith, and today I'm very happy to be joined by Dr. Nithin Nadapa from Philadelphia. We will be discussing his article, which is currently available in Early View online, entitled Outcomes After Complete Endoscopic Sinus Surgery and Aspirin Desensitization in Aspirin-Exacerbated Respiratory Disease. Nithin, welcome to the podcast.
Tim, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. Just want to say thank you. I've been listening to your podcasts, and I was hoping to get an invite at some point, so thank you.
Gosh, I'm glad to hear somebody's listening to the podcast, so that's a good start. Thank you for taking the time. This is, you know, aspirin triad disease and surgery in patients with aspirin triad disease. It's absolutely one of my favorite topics for whatever reason. And then this idea that aspirin desensitization adds value to the post-surgical outcomes, I think that really does, in fact, correlate with my own clinical experience over the years. So I was very interested to see how you studied this. Tell us a little bit about how you got interested in this and how the study began.
Sure, Tim. Essentially, as you know, similar practices, you see these aspirin-exacerbated respiratory disease patients. And here at Penn, we were seeing a lot when I first started in practice, and the closest person for us for aspirin desensitization was an allergy immunologist, John Basso, who is in Nyack, New York, so about 2.5 hours away from us. We would see these patients, and I would say, okay, well, listen, I'm going to do really good surgery on you, but just know that you've got this AERD. It's very challenging. And if you're interested, there's a gentleman over in New York who does this desensitization afterwards. And part of the issue was they're already traveling to get to you, and then you're talking about traveling somewhere else for its desensitization. And I had a number of patients who just said, you know what, I'm really interested. It's really fascinating, but it's just not working out for me. So we'd operated those patients. And for me, again, these were my most challenging patients. And then I finally had a couple patients who anecdotally, they decided, yeah, let's do it. And they went and did desensitization afterwards. And my most memorable patient was one patient who I'd actually operated on. And it was like her sixth or seventh surgery, first by me. And she lasted about a year, year and a half. And she comes back to me and she's got grade 2 polyps and I'm all disappointed. I can't believe I failed on the surgery. And she's like, I think I need surgery again. She's like, I'm like, why are you back to me? You know, we failed. She's like, oh, you're the best that's ever happened. I'm like, all right, we got to try something new. If a year and a half is the best that we can get for you. And I operated on her again, same surgery, and I had her desensitized with John Basso, and she's now about 4 years out and doing perfectly. It was that anecdotal evidence, and I had a few of those that were enough to say, hey, let's really try to look at this a little more. And interestingly enough, our group actually wound up hiring John over in our division, actually. So we have him in our division of rhinology right now because we believe so strongly in the data and that we're improving patient outcomes.
Now, that's really fascinating and a kind of a parallel story to me where I perform the surgery here and then send the patients 3 hours away to Central Oregon where there happens to be a Scripps-trained immunologist who does aspirin, who's very, very comfortable with aspirin desensitization. And so I've run into kind of the same thing you have, and I've also considered figuring out a way to bring this guy into our department, into our division to help us with these patients. So that's a very interesting story to me. Now, tell me this, and I would also share that I've also had those anecdotal improvement, and that's what's made me more of a believer in adding aspirin desensitization post-surgery in this patient population. I should also say I have the anecdote of one or two patients who have had very severe GI bleeds thought to be related to the aspirin therapy they were taking after desensitization therapy. So I always tell my patients it's not all roses, that
right.
In fact, there are risks to aspirin desensitization. We all think about those acute risks of aspirin desensitization, but there are even longer term risks.
You're absolutely right. I mean, there's no question, especially GI, these patients who have already been on a number of corticosteroids throughout their life, so they already have that risk factor built in. And in fact, our study, we were looking at patients for about 2.5 years, and there was 3 patients out of our 22 that went through that did have to withdraw due to GI side effects. So there's no question that there is an issue there, but I think the pros of the number of patients who are doing much better with this versus surgery alone, just based on the data that's coming out on this, I think for these patients who have had multiple surgeries in most situations,
yeah.
It does make a lot of sense as long as they're counseled the correct way.
Yeah.
The patients we've had with the GI issues, again, they knew these things going into it as well, and it was not something where they were upset at us for doing this either. You know, they said, I've had multiple surgeries, I'm really looking for a different route that may give me that chance.
I think that's where I've offered it as well. I'm not doing this with primary surgery in the patient with AERD. Does that jive with you?
So,
yeah.
Admittedly, we've gotten a little more aggressive that we are doing it on the first surgery we have, but typically that's never their first surgery. So
yeah.
I don't know that I've seen an AERD patient that I'm their first surgery. So we are more aggressive, especially with John here. So what's kind of nice is we have our center, so the patients are seeing both him and either me or my partner Jim Palmer at the same time. And so we're getting a little more feedback from that standpoint. So we're desensitized quite a few. I think in the year and a half he's been here, we've done about 60, and
okay.
We're on pace for about a little under 100 in the next year.
Okay. Now tell us about the co-therapies that these patients are taking. I mean, they have surgery, and we're going to talk about the surgical style for this particular case, but they have surgery, they undergo aspirin desensitization, ideally in that 3 to 6 week window after the surgery. And what other therapies are they taking? Are they typically taking steroid rinses? Are they typically taking leukotriene antagonists?
We're still sticking with our general philosophy on inflammatory disease, which is that wide open surgery, trying to open up those cavities to get the topical irrigations in. We're definitely doing budesonide rinses as a long-term adjunct to therapy. We do have them on prednisone after surgery for a little longer than we will your routine patients, just again, to try to keep those cavities settled down a little bit.
How long and what's your dose on that?
I think me and my partners are different in this, so I'm just speaking for myself, but I'll typically go 20 milligrams a day on a standard-sized patient for about 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
And then I'll taper down by about 5 milligrams every 5 days after that.
Sounds a little bit like the way we used to manage allergic fungal sinusitis type cases.
Right, and we're really trying to keep that inflammatory pathway down, and that's mine, and again, I think everyone varies a little bit here, just with the evidence out there. And then we'll get them desensitized, so the desensitization protocol here is John Basso, he'll actually bring him into our surgery center, which is attached to our hospital, and in the post-anesthesia care unit, he'll typically set up about 4 patients at once, where he'll have them monitor, and then he also traded scripts, and he does, I believe, is a modified desensitization protocol, where he starts the first day, and I believe he does 1 spray of nasal ketorolac and then sees if they respond. Then he goes up to 2, 4, 6, then goes to oral, and then they go home that day, and then the next day they come back with higher doses of oral aspirin, and then we go from there.
Yeah, I think that scripts, I mean, in my experience, yeah, the folks who have spent time at Scripps really have been able to nail this protocol down.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That's what it seems like for us. Again, I think that the challenge on these patients that you're seeing when you talk about if you could bring someone in is these are such challenging patients, and it's a bit of a moving target, you know, how inflamed they are, whether they've had a recent URI. It has helped us, the fact that we've got both the surgeon and the allergy immunologist at the same area, just because these patients continue to still have bumps down the road, as you mentioned before.
Now, your revision rate, your revision surgical rate in these patients, that is revising your own surgery within that 30-month follow-up time period was about 10% in this particular study. I'm curious, when you've watched patients with this disease recur with regard to their polyposis, is there a specific area in the sinuses that they tend to recur in your experience?
Traditionally, you always think about people recurring around the skull base or the frontal recesses and things like that. But these patients still, once they start failing, you really see that entire nasal cavity, even the septum and the turbinates, yeah. I mean, everything just starts to swell. Now, you walk in, and even after decongestant, that camera doesn't even want to go in. It seems like they hit some point where then essentially it's a systemic involvement, and they're having issues. So I wouldn't say that there's anywhere that I specifically see a recurrence pattern, per se. I will tell you, we've gotten, for right or wrong, a little heavier-handed in drilling patients out that have appropriate anatomy. I don't know if that's making a difference or not, but just worried about that area from a topical therapy standpoint.
That's what I guess I was getting at. I mean, over my years, I think that if I could nail down an area, a specific area, that is the most common site of recurrence in patients who have recurrent polyposis, whatever the etiology, whether they have aspirin sensitivity or not, I find that it occurs more commonly in the frontal recesses. And then in patients where I've been able to watch it recur literally over months of following them, it starts there and tracks posteriorly along the skull base. These patients who I see who come back to the office and they've got it in the frontal recesses and along the skull base posteriorly, but you can see their sphenoidotomy and you can see their maxillary antrostomy, I've begun to assume that their primary site of recurrence is the frontal recess. I don't know if I'm right about that, but that's my clinical intuition tells me that. So that's then led me to become or to think about being more surgically aggressive in the frontal recesses and the frontal sinuses. And in this particular patient population, I am more likely to perform an endoscopic modified Lothar procedure or a draft 3 procedure, whatever you want, a drill out, whatever you want to call it. In this population, it's a very common procedure, I think, in my practice.
Right, and that's the same with us, and I think, like I said, I think we're getting a little more heavy-handed on going that direction. We're starting to pull our data together on that, but we don't have a good enough long-term data. Like, really, until we had our allergy immunologist come with us in our group, which, like I said, was about a year and a half ago, we weren't as coordinated on looking at all the data together, so now we're starting to accrue it, because I'm actually very curious to that question, whether we're going to see with the drill-out patients less recurrence, like you and I hypothesize here.
I will be ecstatic when you come forward with those data, and definitely that is a definite invite to the podcast if you come out with that study, because I'm convinced it's going to show that the modified Lothrop helps prevent polyp recurrence in these recurrent polyp-type patients, whether it's aspirin triad or not, but particularly an aspirin triad. Okay, so what does, when you say they're doing great, I mean, you've talked about their SNOT 22 scores dropping from somewhere around a 50 to 20, so a 30-point drop at 30-month follow-up, 25-30-point drop is what you reported, which is quite a nice improvement in quality of life. What does their endoscopic examination typically look like? Is it looking pristine or not necessarily pristine? In these patients with aspirin triad, if you see a pristine endoscopic exam in addition to all of this, it's almost unbelievable to your eyes that their nose could do that.
I think there still is, just like everything else with inflammation, there still is your variation. The cases I told you about that anecdotally did great, I mean, those are the cases I showed the videos at the talks and things like that. They look, like you said, pristine. But no, I don't think all of them are that way. And then I think there also is a little bit of a game, you know, when they're started on the aspirin, they're starting at 650 BID. What we'll typically do is once we see them about 3 or 4 months out, we look endoscopically and say, hey, you know what, this patient does look pristine. The first thing we do is we drop that aspirin down. And some of those patients will tolerate that. Other patients, you come back the next visit and they're starting to swell up a little bit, where we say, hey, we got to give you a prednisone burst and we're going to bump your aspirin back up. So I still think there is this variability that, like you said, this still isn't a complete catch-all. It's just like everything else with inflammation, that there is still those degrees, those patients. But Most of these patients, even with the SNOT scores we talked about, versus what their either baseline is or their experience immediately after surgery without this treatment is typically much worse.
Well, that's just excellent. Nathan, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about the paper. It's a fascinating topic, I think, to me and many others. And we recognize we're all treating this incredibly heterogeneous disease process. And these patients with aspirin sensitivity are a very classic subgroup to study. I guess that's what I like about them. They do all from a endoscopic exam and whatnot. They look more alike than they do different, don't they?
Yeah, I agree with you completely.
Well, listen, I look forward to the follow-up studies that are going to come out of your group now that you've put this excellent multidisciplinary group together. I look forward to the clinical research and outcome studies that come out of there and have you back on the podcast at some point, Nathan.
Great, Tim. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for listening. Scope It Out is a co-production of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology and Wiley. All opinions in this podcast are those of Dr. Smith and his guests and do not necessarily reflect those of Wiley or of the sponsors.